We are back with another episode of The Daily.
Oh, God. What is this bit that you keep
this
doing?
Is not The Daily. I hate The Daily.
We're keep it, and everyone's going to keep it.
They're my rivals.
Is that so? You've assigned them your rivals?
I've assigned them my rivals.
Do they know who you are? Okay, moving on.
Okay. Ooh. Do they know who you are?
Did I ask? You started it.
Jimmy Neutron.
What if Michael Barbadaro is you guys' biggest fan?
You never know. You
and
never
he's
know.
Like, Ira, I didn't do anything to you.
I am once again with Louis Vertel, who I can't seem to get rid of. And also, Ray Sani, you are back.
I am back, but you'll be rid of me very soon.
Ray and I were just chilling out in the lobby. Mm-hmm. I just enjoy the hell out of
her. I enjoy the hell out of you.
He called you Nanny McPhee.
Call me Nanny McPhee because I have a yellow bag full of vitamins.
I was like, ooh, magic.
And I explained my anemia to him why I need this one because I faint. And
well, we are here and it is election day. This episode, people will be listening to this after they know the result.
Yeah, I'm sorry to be on this side of the timeline for the time being. I want to join you all in the future, but here we are. I'm wearing all blue if it helps.
Well, you know, people want the hard-hitting politics from, you know, those three boys.
Oh, yeah. They can't shut up about it.
I know. Always talking about voting.
With their stupid-ass Zara pants and their politics.
Listen, if today went really well, then everyone's in a good mood listening to this episode.
Woohoo!
If not, then they probably really are looking forward to this episode.
Right.
You need us? ?
Yeah. Yes, you need us. This is exactly what I wanted.
So we should be preemptively celebrating.
Well, I'm already celebrating because what's the tea? The girls are fighting.
It's a shame who gets to qualify as the girls sometimes.
The MAGA girls are fighting.
Oh, God.
I know that we don't talk about Mr. Kardashian on the show really anymore because he stresses me out. However, I am so amused by the fact that he said that he wanted to pull out of politics and I hope clear his mind and get the help he needs. But it's sent that Candace Owens, evil Stacey Dash, into a tizzy.
Evil Stacey Dash. Okay.
Like
deluxe Stacey Dash.
Like cashew milk Stacey Dash.
Oh.
That's how evil she is. Ooh. Cashew milk is the ghetto. Candace Owens, who started that Black State of the Union when she announced the launch of her Blexit merchandise.
Just anything's a pun now. It doesn't matter.
Claimed was designed by her good friend and fellow superhero Kanye West. First of all, ma'am, you are not a superhero.
Mm.
She just called herself.
Yes,
okay.
Fellow superhero. Yeah. If anything, the Planeteers are trying to take you down.
Oh, no, certainly. Oh, no. She's laying toxins all over the earth.
No, actually, she is a superhero because to be a scammer like that in public, black girl.
I know.
You are a super villain.
I want to say she is succeeding more than like GOP black chick and like Stacey Dash, but I have no idea how many coins Candace is actually making.
You'll never know.
I am curious about how things like this are often monetized. Because again, yes, with Ann Coulter, it's always about a book. She always comes out with a new statement when she has a book.
Right.
These people are just like,
I don't think Candace
tweeting
can write.
Yeah, so yeah.
Can any of them write?
I will say it never really seems like her edges are fucked up.
Excuse me? No. Are you kidding me? Her blowouts look really aggressed.
Well, yes.
She's always got, like, she's always on, like, an Alex Jones clip looking like her ends are fried. What are you talking about? She's never doobie wrapped successfully. Where are your pins, girl? Every time she, like, her hair always looks like, this is, okay, black ladies in the audience, like, you know what I'm talking about. When you have a relaxer and you have to wrap your hair at night, Candace Owens always looks like she brushed hers down, but not, she didn't shake it out. So there's no volume. It's just pressed on her forehead in the direction I know she wrapped it yesterday. With a wrap, you just put your relaxed hair in a beehive or whatever around your head.
So, not making enough coins,
no.
I guess.
Or she knows that her audience will never know that her hair don't look right. So she's good. She's good to go.
That's true.
She's saving on a hairdresser.
It's like when I throw out a hat when I'm going to, like, Black Brunch. If I have not gotten the lineup.
Exactly.
But if I'm just, like, hanging out with my white friends, I'm like...
Who needs a lineup? Exactly.
I'm really thrilled to learn on this podcast.
Anyway.
I'm storing it.
Kanye immediately refuted those claims and tweeted that he never wanted any association with Blexit and he did not design any of that shit. He also tweeted, "My eyes are now wide open and I realize I've been used to spread messages I don't believe in. I'm distancing myself from politics and focusing on being creative."
He's also, like, just taking the Patty Hearst stance. Like, I can't believe how brainwashed I was. I wasn't a part of it at all.
Stefano D'Amara planted a chip in my tooth.
Will Kanye pull off the baby switch?
Anyway, Candace started blaming the media for her for all of this. And Tommy Lahren.
My favorite Olsen Twins movie villain.
I really hate this woman, but
not seem like someone in an Olsen Twins movie who says, "Huh, you with Jake? That's a laugh."
She turned into a villain because Lizzie McGuire was mean to her in high school.
You've got it. Yes.
She's the kind of girl that Taylor Swift sings about not knowing she might be.
Precisely. Yes.
But Tommy sort of blasted Candace and was like, "Are you going to turn on Kanye now? That shit was doomed to sink from the start, but hunger for fame and money was placed over the movement. Funny how he was a free thinker before, and now he's a traitor. Sounds a lot like a tactic of the left. You made your bed, now lie in it." And then Candace tried to be like, "You know what? I can reveal all sorts of mean things that you've said about me and end your non-career."
Boom.
So it seems like these girls have been beefing for a minute.
I feel like...
Which is so funny to me that, of course, there's infighting in MAGA land.
Well, first of all, if they're horrible and they write about each other, let them fight. Let them have it.
Take each other out.
It's like, yes, you are trash and so are you, and this is accurate. My thing is, just because of who they are, I bet they are beefing over a man. Those silly, silly.
Ooh, I love that.
Candace was like, "I'm supposed to be in a couple with the only other black person in this room," and Tommy's been sneaking texts to her man the whole time.
Candace is like, "I should have been motherfucking Black Mom. I should have been interviewed by Trevor Noah.
Exactly.
I should be posted up with Charlamagne."
Exactly.
Also, my issue is whenever there's a feud between anybody, instinctively I want to pick a side, and then except my brain control alts deletes every time I try to do that.
You can't.
Here. No.
Because Tommy is doing that sort of Ben Shapiro thing where it's like you say something that sounds reasonable, but when you unpack why they said that thing, it's because everything else in their brain is, you know, like One Day at Horrorland.
Yes,
the
right.
The Goosebumps book.
Tommy specifically reminds me of, I went to a state school. you ever take a freshman rhetoric class and then every once in a while somebody who doesn't speak at all raises their hand and goes, "Well, did you ever ask God what he would think about this?" And it's like, "Well, where have you been hiding?"
I don't know if God has opinions on Mrs. Dalloway.
Right.
But thank you.
What's crazy to me is Candace is trying to do Twitter and drag Shorty the way that, you know, woke black folk drag people. But she's so corny, she can't even do it properly. Who says and/or in a tweet when you're dragging somebody? Call her a bitch and keep it moving. What the fuck?
Words
you
to live
dweeb?
By. Yeah,
she's
right.
A dweeb, Candace. You're a dweeb.
I will give Tapioca credit for one thing. Even when Kanye first was linking up with Trump, she was one of the few racist conservative voices who was like, "If you hit your wagon to Kanye, you gon' lose."
But my thing is, that's the problem here, because she's right about Kanye, and she's right about Candace, but she right about them because she don't trust black people. What are we supposed
See?
To do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I really think she doesn't trust black people just because it's profitable. I mean, she uploaded Instagrams of her, rapping along to 21 Savage, and I mean, only niggas listen to 21 Savage.
Hello?
I'm not listening to 21 Savage on the regular.
He stands for everything your politics are supposedly against. You know what I mean?
Why don't
you
she'll go be sing like, some Justin? Your husband's a drug dealer, Beyonce. Were you listening to?
And talking about you hate like radical Black Panther stuff, you know? And then it's like 21 Savage. It says Savage in his name.
Your blonde hair looks like a Black Panther's den.
By the way,
like a cat's den, I don't know, catnip.
You did a great job. Here's my other thing about her. It must be exhausting for Republicans to have to pretend she is funny. Look, I'm not saying like Democrat humor is always like lacking in cliche or whatever, but I at least there's like a variety of funny people I can pick out on the left. This woman just doesn't know like the rhythm of funny. It's a shame.
I have a theory, and I hold fast to it. I've had it for a long time. Conservatives and Republicans can't be funny because they are not generous enough to give us the gift of laughter.
Yeah, oof, yes.
That's it. How can you bring joy to people when all you've been doing is withholding? If your life's philosophy is to keep other people from having...
Yeah, being proud of your selfishness.
Exactly. Yeah. How can you disperse joy? That's impossible. So, you know, if you hate people, you can't make people laugh.
That was some Jerry Springer final thought wisdom.
Oh my God. That hurt
How
my
can you
disprove?
Oh, I said that affectionately. Jerry's my queen.
Okay.
You know that.
Later this episode, I will talk to Abby Jacobson about her new book, I Might Regret This, and we're going to play a game. Lewis's eyes just lit up.
There better be some prizes and dings.
Vanna White's here.
Ah!
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
After SNL posted a promo video where Pete Davidson asked the musical guest Maggie Rogers to marry him and then declared 0-for-3 when she refused him, Ariana Grande tweeted, "For somebody who claims to hate relevancy, you sure love clinging to it, huh?" She followed that tweet up with, "Thank you, next," which turned out to be her newest single, a ballad thanking her exes for teaching her valuable relationship lessons, released 30 minutes before the start of Saturday's SNL. And the song, I love.
It's really cute.
It's really, it might be one of her best songs.
It's surprisingly candid. It names all the exes by name, which is, in the universe of You're So Vain, quite shocking.
Thought I'd end up with Sean, but he wasn't a match. Wrote some songs about Ricky, now I listen and laugh.
Big Sean, Ricky Alvarez, the dancer of hers that was involved in the donut
Ojani
licking.
Noah of her relationships. It's a J-Lo reference.
Ohani.
Oh, honey. Oh, yeah. Thank you.
I can see why you wouldn't remember since it was 20 days.
That's true.
But
the song is very sweet and genuine, which makes it sort of weird that it came out of the context of her tweeting that about Pete. But I think maybe that's why she deleted those tweets.
Yeah. And also, too, I thought it was nice because she flipped it on its head, right? I have a love-hate relationship with Drake's music. And it felt very nice to hear a person, a woman, first of all, call out an ex's name, but not in this, like, passive-aggressive, like, feels like...
Why you wearing no clothes when you going out? Why you with all these men?
But like,
that's Drake.
That is Drake. But also just on some, like, I'm going to interrupt your life by yelling your name on a chorus. Maybe we haven't talked in 3 years. But this felt like nice and considered and genuine. Like, okay, I'm going to reach out to Sean. I'm going to reach out. I can't reach out to Angel. And then, you know, and it just felt like nice. Like if she flipped it on his head, look, I'm going to take ownership of the conversation. I'm not going to let myself be on the receiving end of punchlines or be talked about. I'm going to put my voice in there. I'm going to say what I need to say, and I'm going to control the narrative. And I think it's really cool. She's this tiny little person.
It
and
is so smart so because it reminds me of how the devil – Justin Timberlake is currently promoting his new book and was talking about Britney again. And I'm like, stop mentioning Britney when you're promoting shit.
He launched his career on her genitals, basically.
Yes, with Cry Me a River. And it's like,
or all those interviews, too.
Constantly Howard talking, Stern and all that. Yeah.
Revealing about, she's not a virgin and stuff. Like,
and it's nice to have, you know, Ariana be like, you know what? You're going to stop talking about me, Pete, because I'm going to put your name on wax.
Do you know what I
don't think things go on wax anymore.
They sure don't.
Payola!
Else... That's so funny. No, what I like about this also is it stands in stark contrast to, do you remember, I want to say this is a VMAs performance, Taylor Swift performed one of her breakup songs and then said something in a British accent to indicate that it was a kind of about Harry Styles or whatever. It's like, there's no sheepishness here. No, like, wink, wink, you know who I'm talking about. She's maturely saying, this is who I'm talking about. You guys know we're together, whatever. And, like, there's no
Taylor's
shame in saying these people by name. Yeah.
Whole thing is like, I have all these songs and maybe they're about this ex, but maybe they're not. But there's also because those songs are supposed to be shady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And here it's like, you know, I'm not being shady.
Right.
I'm just going to say something nice. But it's also, this song is going to be a hit. So whenever you're in a club, you're going to have to see people singing along to a song that your ex wrote about you.
Right.
Well, what's really cool about this is Ariana's really young. And when I was like her age, I remember like
25.
Right? And there were all these like, I was in like tumultuous situations back then. And I remember being like, all right, when I get my first TV stand-up set, I'm going to drag this dude. I'm going to drag him. And it took a while, and there was way more dudes to drag by then that I let it go, and I couldn't. But what's really...
My name is Earl over here.
On my list, I'm like, drag him. He didn't answer the phone at this time. But what's cool about Shorty, she's like, I'm not going to, like, let's just get this all out. Like, she's like, I'm not going to waste my energy on negativity. I'm just going to, like, pull it together, make myself learn from this, invite you on this journey. Can you imagine if your 24-year-old self or your 25-year-old self was out here talking about your exes in public? It would be a disaster.
It would not be cute, no.
And Shorty is just like, oh, I'm mad. Here's a couple angry tweets. Wait, the promo. And then she went right into PR mode. Props to you, Shorty. Wield your business power the way you should.
Also, in naming them directly, to me, actually, the sentiment of the song feels more sincere than it would be if she were just talking about like a random ex or something like that. Because all songs sound like that. You know what I mean? Like, we're familiar with those sentiments. So to make it specific about these people, I think
makes it different. It makes it almost sort of like brand new in the genre, just because you flip that whole like anonymous talking about an ex thing on its head.
And also there's something really, really cool about like avoiding the interviews, avoiding like a conversation about this person and sucking up all your promo time talking about somebody else. Put it on the song and then
because now people
got to
talk about the song
exactly.
And you make money off of
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Also, so we all know one of the most famous songs about an anonymous lover is You Ought to Know by Alanis Morissette. Shout out here. On Alanis Morissette's second album, she has a song called
Beyonce's
Unsent.
Beyonce's done the best cover of that.
Say what?
Beyonce's done the best cover
It was
of
a
that.
Very good cover. I don't know about the best cover.
Who covered it better?
Crystal Bowersox on American Idol. We can talk about that another time.
Get the fuck out of here. Team Nicki McKibben.
Alanis Morissette has a song. Oh, wow. She covered Edge of 17. It wasn't that bad. Moving on. Alanis Morissette has a song called Unsent, where she literally addresses five different exes, and it's like a letter to them and says the names. And I always think about, man, it's so refreshing to hear an adult deal with a relationship. It's like, you know the song It's Too Late by Carole King? Like, it's over, but I'm glad it happened. It's such a rare sentiment. I would love to see that expressed more in songs. Mm-hmm. So,
Especially in pop music. You know, it came out the same weekend. Also, as a lot of other like self-love songs, Carly Rae Jepsen dropped her Party for One.
We're going to get to my Keep It later.
Ooh, which, you know, is about, you know, just hanging out with yourself.
Uh-huh. I've prepared material about
Mariah
this. We'll
Carey
get to it
dropped
second.
Her new song,
oh,
No
yeah.
No, Queen of Consent.
Wait, can we just, but if we're celebrating the self-love anthems, let's not forget a pioneer such
Remy
as
Ma.
Tweet. Oh. You went Remy Ma.
It. I got a reason.
Oh, I went Ma. Tweet.
Tweet. Her master.
Oh my.
Her masturbating.
I love that.
Yes. Her masturbating in the mirror.
Yes.
Anthem.
Hello. Because Ari's like, I'm in a relationship with me. I'm like, Tweet is too.
From the album Southern Hummingbird.
Exactly.
Yes.
Why didn't you let Tweet happen, America? We had Missy and Tweet and Ginuwine on songs together.
I
want to
say Amory came out around the same time too. It was
Amory.
A lot of I thought it was a lot of approachable ladies in R&B.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Amory just released an EP.
Oh yeah.
Did she?
I think so.
One Thing is like among the all-time bangers, I think.
What's that joint with the weird beat? Never mind.
Why Can't We?
Fabulous.
I love that song too.
Yeah.
Why Can't We is pretty dope. Yeah.
Yeah. Fabolous.
Somebody said he was, I saw on Twitter that someone called him the Carmelo Anthony, like him and Carmelo Anthony are the same people in their fields. And I'm like, shit, makes sense.
What's wild too is that while Ariana was busy doing this, Pete Davidson was busy talking about her, he got in the news himself because he made a joke on SNL where he likened Republican congressional candidate Dan Crenshaw to a hitman from a porno due to his eye patch, which he wears because he lost his eye serving in Afghanistan.
Not a popular tick. I kind of think it's just a good joke. I mean,
I
it's like, it's weird.
It just made me chuckle.
I do too.
Yeah.
Like,
it's maybe weird to level it at that guy, but I'm sorry, Hitman in a Porno is a
it's
very
hilarious.
Specific look.
Or I would have been like, what are you, a villain on Days of Our Lives?
Yes,
like,
right.
It's, a lot of people have said that the joke was in poor taste. Here was Tapioca again coming out being like, how dare you talk about our vets like this? I wish you would even be in proximity to a vet or a real man, and they'd show you what they think about your joke.
What the fuck is she a veteran of? Watching PAX? Yeah.
Look, I don't know. I feel like, on the one hand, I get why people are particularly sensitive. Like, I'm a sensitive person, especially in this climate. I feel
it's
like...
It's weird to be sensitive about vets when our president doesn't give a fuck about
but
them.
But that's what I was like about. It's like... We are overcorrecting because of Trump, but not correcting Trump. And that is infuriating. Like, look, I thought it was funny. I'm sorry. I did. I'm not going to lie and say, I thought it was funny. It made me chuckle here. I read it. I thought it was funny. But even if you are offended, it just seems like a bizarre place. And it's happening a lot lately. And I, again, think that Trump has changed everything about how everybody engages with each other in real life and on social media. And so we're all in this like aggressive trying to find places to control something. And so today we're going to control what joke Pete Davidson tells on TV because we're too angry or unsettled or in distress to like not take a hold and control a situation. And it's an over like compensation, like, okay, let's pour $150,000 into veterans groups because Pete made a eye patch joke when Trump has been devastating veterans and not helping. Didn't he just like gut the VA? Like,
yeah,
it's such a frustrating thing to be watching.
It is interesting though, Ariana's comment about Pete Davidson sort of clinging to relevancy in the relationship when that really does not seem to be his vibe generally. So it's weird that he is like, I understand he asked Lauren to back away from the thing he had planned about Ariana Grande, but just, I'm uncomfortable with how much time they've spent with it on the show just anyway.
Part of it feels like, you know, it's SNL and it seems like they want Pete Davidson to be a breakout star because it's been a minute since there's been a new breakout SNL star.
And particularly it's like, a male star.
Yeah. And it's like he was just embroiled in this big celebrity romance. Yeah. Like it would kind of be dumb if they didn't make jokes about it. But I can see on the flip side, you know, like don't make jokes about Ariana anymore. Like move on.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least have them be interesting.
I mean, I just didn't like it. I didn't like it for her. You know what I mean? It's a tough thing because his art is talking.
Yes.
And talking about things, and she's doing her art talking about him too. And so it feels unfair to say one person can and can't talk, but it is a lot more uncomfortable because conversation is more direct than song, and it invites us in a way that a song doesn't. It doesn't. It feels too personal sometimes, and it's just like it kind of sucks for him, like. He's this guy trying to do his own art too,
right.
And it's
which is
like
funny because we don't really know much about Pete's art, mm-hmm. You know, like there's nothing else for us to like really cling on to besides, you know, he's in SNL,
plays a gay guy in Set It Off, which I have railed against before.
Yes, on the show
I did.
You know, so it's like, what else is he gonna do? You know, it's like I'm waiting for that new.
From what I've seen of his comedy, he seems to be very open and vulnerable and willing to engage with pain directly. And I hope that he figures out a way to do it in a way that like is helpful for the both of them, because I would like to see him process it in a funny way. The way that she gave us a pop track, yeah. That probably will change the way we talk about relationships and music. Then I would love to see him do something similar.
I'm looking for his Nanette.
We all are. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, particularly if on SNL specifically, it seems like it's basically his job to be like, well, what's up with me? You know what I mean? Like, nobody else does that. So if it's going to always be that personal, as you said, Ray, hopefully something rad can come out of it.
When we're back, Rebel Wilson is mad as hell, and she is not going to take it anymore.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
On Ellen last week, Rebel Wilson, Australian actress who may be 21, maybe 72, I don't know.
Anywhere in between, sure.
Expressed her pride in being the first ever plus-size girl to be the star of a romantic comedy. Of course, that's far from the truth. She went to the Sam Smith School of Googling, which she was like, am I the first?
Google replied, maybe.
Unclear. Ask again later. Yeah. She asked the magic eight ball. And the internet, naturally, called her out for not knowing her history and ignoring the work of prominent plus-size actresses like, you know, Ricky Lake, and also Queen Latifah and Monique. And her initial response was to tweet, yeah, I of course know of those movies, but it was questionable as to whether, one, technically those actresses were plus size when filming those movies.
Oh, flying, fuck.
Or two, technically those films are categorized / built as studio rom-com with a sole lead, so there's a slight gray area.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine giving us Oscar categories to explain why you forgot who came before you?
Well, actually, I believe that that one only would have been
a supporting
viable.
Actress in this one. Who are you? That's ridiculous. Who are you that you thought that that was in a useful tactic? Queen Latifah was only 5 pounds here. She was wearing a waist trainer. It doesn't count. Like, what the fuck?
It sounds like something you think to yourself, like, oh, it's obviously incredibly rare that a plus-size actress gets to star in any movie, let alone a rom-com. I can't think of that many. I'm thinking about it for another 5 seconds. Well, one's not coming to mind. I've decided to believe I'm the only one. It just seems like something where someone could have stepped in. Because on Ellen, it feels like a marketing tactic.
That's
she has
what
planned,
I thought. Yeah.
Which is really strange. Again, if she had just insisted, look, it's super rare that like someone like me gets to be in a position like this, that would have been good. Also would have been good if she had said, it really feels to me like Hollywood picks one plus size person that can be famous at any given mm-hmm. moment. You know what I mean? When it was Ricky Lake in the Hairspray era, then it was Rosie O'Donnell and then Cameron Manheim and Queen Latifah, you know, Monique, etc. And now we have Melissa McCarthy in all these movies, and Rebel Wilson gets to be in a movie too. What a wild world we live in where two movies can exist at the same time. If she had pointed that out, that would have been great. But instead, this moment is sort of tarnished by some statistical nonsense.
Right. It's just so weird to me, you know, like, you didn't grow up like watching some of these movies, and like, because I remember, you know, when I see someone who looks like me on TV or in a film, you
know?
Do
you genuinely think Rebel Wilson is looking at Queen Latifah and thinking she looks like her?
Ricky Lake, maybe. She didn't see Baby Cakes?
She didn't see Mrs. Winterbourne, sweetie?
I haven't seen either of those things.
Oh, right. You've got to see. You've got to see Brendan Fraser in period gear. Come on.
I mean,
I don't know.
Toni Collette gained weight for Muriel's Wedding.
True enough.
And that's an Australian chick like her.
Fair enough.
So what's good, Rebellious Wilson?
I don't know what it means to decide that you are a person who has made history and then discover you hadn't. I don't know what your tweet storms are supposed to look like
she
after that.
She had to text Sam Smith.
I have no idea. But what's crazy to me is there's a thing that happens in feminist spaces a lot where if a black woman makes a correction on a white woman, suddenly we're mean, aggressive, bullies and stuff.
Right, because Monique chimed in with a response telling Wilson to take a moment and know the history. Mm-hmm. And other black female critics started chiming in saying, hey, you're erasing Monique. You're erasing Queen Latifah.
It was a black woman who brought up the issue at all. Because
yes.
She was like, hey, Rebel, this isn't true because of Queen Latifah and Monique. And you guys have mentioned non-black women. That came even before then.
It was Clarkeisha Kent, who I follow on Twitter, and I love her writing. She was one of the initial black women who called out Rebel, and Rebel's response was to start blocking all these black women who tweeted at her about this issue.
Not just only blocking black women or black people who tweeted at her, but listening and conversing with the white ones.
Yes.
But like, or at least at one that she like very visibly responded to. And then Monique seemed to be one of the few black women she like engaged with directly. And it's infuriating because
she did not want Monique and her husband to
hello?
Film a
she
response
didn't want those
video.
Smoke. She was like, she refused to call Charlemagne his name, Charlemagne. She called him Leonard that whole interview. Rebel did not want to get Leonarded, okay? So my frustration is just that. Instead of just being like, my bad, I didn't know, I'm excited to be in the company of these queens. It would have been fine, but Shorty kept being like, block, block, not listening. And I know what it's like to feel like people are coming at you for no reason. I'm not Rebel Wilson. I'm not famous at all. But I know what it is to be arrogant enough to hold on to a something because somebody is telling you you did something you didn't even realize the offense. But there is a point where it's just reasonable to be like, oh, I've assessed this information. I didn't have the information you people have. Now I have it. What am I going to do to correct it? But the whole, not just ignoring it, because you could mute, right?
I was going to say, mute was the option.
She blocked.
She blocked, which means fuck you. I don't want any of your information. I don't want you to see what I'm about, whatever, which feels like a more aggressive action. Like, I am blocking the input. I'm not going to receive actual facts.
As opposed to, like, remember when Elizabeth Banks said that Steven Spielberg had never done a movie with a woman and had left out The Color Purple?
Yeah.
She course corrected that day and apologized for excluding that, and was like, I'm also very sorry that I excluded this film because it was a black film, and my bad. She didn't block people. Mm-mm. She didn't go crazy, and she certainly didn't apologize like Rebel did,
right,
who said, in a couple well-intentioned moments, hoping to lift my fellow plus-size women up, I neglected to show the proper respect to those who climbed this mountain before me, like Monique, Queen Latifah, Melissa McCarthy, Ricky Lake, and likely many others. With the help of some very compassionate and well-thought-out responses from others on social media, I now realize what I said was not only wrong, but also incredibly hurtful. I blocked people on Twitter because I was hurting from the criticism, but those are the people I actually need to hear from more, not less.
I can hear the $1,500 an hour PR team here.
Who took control of her
Twitter
account?
And they were a day late.
Yes.
So she
didn't have them on retainer.
No.
She hired them immediately.
Hey, white celebrities, have a race PR person on deck. You about to tweet yourself into a problem. It's inevitable. Have one.
And you're Australian, you know, y'all just stumble into racism on any given day.
Hello. So she probably didn't even know which type of black people we was talking about.
Is Taika Waititi mad at me?
Kind of Gatsby coming on in here. Yeah.
The
Cate Blanchett excluding her from the Sydney Theater Company.
Can we also talk about the plot of her movie, her plus size rom com?
I didn't even get to that.
It's called Isn't It Romantic? And it's New York City architect Natalie works hard to get noticed at her job, but is more likely to be asked to deliver coffee and bagels than to design the city's next skyscraper. Mm-hmm. Basically, she has an encounter with a mugger that renders her unconscious as she wakes up to discover that her life has suddenly become her worst nightmare, a romantic comedy, and she is the leading lady. Isn't this I Feel Pretty?
Kind of, yes. It's very amnesiac-y.
A fat girl gets knocked unconscious, wakes up, and all of a sudden she's hot. Hmm. What is happening?
I will say, there were some funny moments in the trailer. I thought it was cute. She wakes up in a hospital that's like golden lit, and she's like, is this a Williams-Sonoma? I can't do it in an Australian accent. Anyway, so maybe it'll be cute.
You know the rest of the cast is so mad at this chick.
Yeah.
Priyanka Chopra, Liam Hemsworth, Adam Devine, and Betty Gilpin.
Whoa.
They are like, why are you fucking
that's
up
a
our
great
promo?
Cast.
Isn't
Betty
it? Gilpin.
I didn't even know that Priyanka was in that.
Yes, she is distracting from the point that Priyanka Chopra is in a rom-com coming out in February, and I would like to go see that.
I would too. I would too. And also Rebel Wilson is fine. Like, she's fun in the roles that I've seen her in.
Pitch Perfect and 17. I really thought that she brought a lot to the table.
I've never seen any of those. I was talking about bit parts and things like
Bridesmaids.
Yeah. When you're somebody's sister or whatever. And it's like, it's great to see your role expanded. I'm excited. Like, I'm excited for you. But it's just like, it didn't have to be all of that. You could have just been like, my bad, I ain't know, and saved you 3 days and $30 million on your PR people, you know?
I will just say, again, definitely excited to show up for just any plus-size woman in a lead role, because one of the movies that came up in this discussion was Last Holiday, starring Queen Latifah, mm-hmm. and that movie exists because it was originally intended for John Candy.
Wow.
I'm just like, it's rare that like we just give movies to these people.
They took a movie for a plus size man.
Yes.
From 20 years
you
ago.
You got it. Because he died in like 93.
Yeah, and then reworked it to plug in a plus size shorty. That's how limited the scripts are for
totally.
Plus size leads. That's insane.
I mean, Judy Garland was originally supposed to star in Moonlight.
That's right. 12 Years a Slave was originally a Grace Kelly joint. But She played the violin. That's how Solomon North came in.
Well, I guess the good out of this is, like, people are now, like, probably revisiting Beauty Shot, Last Holiday, and Just Right.
Look, if Queen Latifah and Common had the same chemistry they had in The Wiz, I could understand why you wouldn't know that that was a rom-com. Just saying.
When we're back, I will talk to Abby Jacobson about her new book, I Might Regret This.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
I am here with Abby Jacobson, co-creator and star of Comedy Central's Broad City. Everyone knows that.
I don't know if everyone knows that.
Everyone who listens to this knows
that. Yeah, I would say that. We have the same demo.
But what they might not know is your new book is out and that you are a New York Times bestselling author. Your book...
Wait, not... Of this not one of this yet. One. I was like, do you in know general, something I don't know?
I've rigged it. I've rigged it. I couldn't I couldn't rig this election. So I was like, let me rig your book.
New York Times bestseller.
Yeah. your new book, I Might Regret This, Essays, Drawings, Vulnerabilities, and Other Stuff is out now.
Yeah, it came out last week.
Yeah. Are you excited? This is your first like essay compilation.
Yeah, I've done a couple other books, but they were coloring books and they were illustrated books, and this is essays. There's some illustrations, but it's primarily words.
Yes.
and so I was really excited to try this. I'm not really an essayist, and so it was really challenging to like figure out my voice in that way. I mostly write scripts.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one thing that was very challenging. And then another thing was their personal essays. It was a very personal slice of my life I was trying to write.
Right, so
about.
Your character on the show is like an outsized version of yourself. Like it's overly exaggerated for comedic effect.
Yeah,
this was
super amplified.
Not doing that.
No. Every once in a while, an essay will be stylized, like a little bit heightened voice, but it's mostly... heightening the anxiety.
I like the sleep studies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you relate to that?
Yeah.
Do you sleep okay?
I do not, actually. Yeah. I have, weirdly, I have this, like, back thing sometimes, so I will wake up in the middle of the night. Also, I'm 32 now, and I just feel like my body just decided to be like, you're old.
Mm-hmm.
So I often wake up just in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, so the sleep studies, there's a couple of them throughout. Well, basically the book is I drove from New York to LA in the summer of 2017 during a time where I was extremely overworked, really heartbroken, and I needed to kind of escape my life. So we had just wrapped shooting and editing season 4, Broad City, and I kind of knew that this end was looming when we were editing. And Broad City had been such a distraction from me being heartbroken. So I write about this in the book, but I'd never been in love before. I'd only dated men up until this point. And this was about a woman. I had fallen in love with a woman. And I was just like such a workaholic and devastated. And I was like, oh my goodness, there's going to be 3 weeks here before I have to work in LA where I'm just going to have to think about this. I needed to like fucking get away. Can I curse? I just did already.
Yeah.
Great.
I say fuck all the time in here.
Yeah. And so I was like, I need to just get away. And I'm such a workaholic that I can't just go on vacation.
Yes.
So I was like, I must create a project in which I allow myself to like go somewhere.
It's crazy. I'm going on vacation now, but it's also like I'm still recording the show when I'm on vacation.
Yeah. You like can't get away from it, but it's a good thing, but it's maybe not sometimes. And so I pitched this book I wasn't exactly sure what it was going to be, but I had to be in LA 3 weeks for work. And so I decided to drive across the country by myself to really, like, I had never done that. So I really was interested in seeing the country in that way and just kind of finding space to think about all this stuff. And, you know, it had been just an intense year for me. And so I pitched this book, and I can't believe someone bought it and let me do it. Also, let me do it not knowing what exactly it was going to be.
That too.
That majorly. And so the book is really, every essay is a city, and either what that city made me think of, or I go back in time. It's a lot about memory. And then there are these sleep studies that you're talking about, because I have a lot of trouble falling asleep. So I'm up a lot, and, you know, your mind goes places.
I did a crazy drive once.
Yeah.
When I first moved here to LA, and I was broke, and I had a friend from grad school's wedding that I had to go to in Idaho.
Whoa, okay.
Could not last minute buy a ticket. So I drove from here to Idaho. I was working at Coffee Bean at the time.
Okay, love Coffee
Bean. And so I got off of my shift, drove there, made it an hour before the wedding.
Have I been to Idaho?
It was like a 26-hour drive.
And did you sleep in your car, or did you sleep in a hotel?
I stopped at a parking lot at a Vegas casino hotel, and I slept there. Because I was like, you can park for free here, and there must be people who just fall asleep in their cars drunk.
How was the wedding?
It was beautiful. It was like outside. It was on his family's farm.
Did you, like,
and everything.
Get changed in the car? Or
I
what'd
did.
You do? Yeah.
Well, in the house when I got
okay,
when I got back.
Okay, okay.
But then I slept in the car.
Right.
But also everyone was, it was sort of at the farm, so everyone was in, like, tents and
right.
things, and I was like, I'll just sleep in the car again.
Well, it is a thing where, right, you can just pick up and go, but you often don't go 26 hours.
Yeah. No. Do not do that straight. So, I also just want to let our listeners know that we have met before.
Yeah, it was at your birthday party.
You met
I
me
crashed
at my
your
birthday party.
I legit crashed. But who wasn't? Jen was invited?
Yes.
Or
Jen was invited. That was
Paul
before.
Crashed with me.
Yes, because Paul and I knew each other, but that was before we started being friends.
Yeah,
and
Paul, Lucia, and I crashed.
Yeah, it was great.
Well,
I was just sort of like,
having us.
Yeah, I remember Jen's husband Travis,
uh-huh.
who works here.
Yeah, who
at
kind
Crooked,
of like set this up.
Yeah, and he also went to grad school with me.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
But Travis was not with us.
No. I feel like that happens often.
I don't know where he wasn't like out. He was like sick or something.
Yeah, I remember. I could probably scroll through my phone and find out why I yelled at him for not being
right.
at my birthday.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
he was like, "Jen's coming and she's bringing some people," and I was like, "Oh, there's
yeah.
Abby."
It was fun.
It was fun because I remember fielding questions the rest of the night from people being like, "I didn't know that you knew Abby Jacobson. Why are you hiding this?"
That's so funny and weird for me, but also okay. Were you like weed?
I was like, we go way back. Yeah. Pre-Broad City.
Yep. She's really changed. Yeah.
No, Travis has a habit of doing that. I met up with Jen and Paul in New Orleans.
Oh, because our friend Bobby is from New Orleans and they were there. Yeah.
Yeah, I happened to be in New Orleans that weekend.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
I love
hanging
out with everyone without Travis. I joke that he's the intern on my show, and I think the listeners actually believe he is.
Oh, Travis.
I revealed
good,
the truth
good
now,
boy.
Finally. He's not. Well, so, like, people identify with your characters so much on the show now, and it's ending.
Yeah, it's ending. We shot the last scene, what day is it, Tuesday? Like, a week, not last Friday, but the Friday before, like, a week and a half ago.
Okay, and so, like, have you even already started thinking now, like, I mean, the book will help, like, distinguishing yourself from... This was, you know, me writing an over-the-top version of me. Now I'm going to start giving you something different.
I think in hindsight, I mean, the beginnings of this book were very much done in, like, a fever dream state of, like, I need to, like, do this and write this and get this, like, out of my system kind of vibe. But now in hindsight, looking back, I think it was a lot of it was to distinguish myself from the character. And I mean, it's the most flattering thing in the world to create a thing and have people feel like I'm friends with them.
Yeah.
And because I share the name with the character, it's like they feel like they know me. I'm like, wow, that's the ultimate goal with the show. Or not, that's not the ultimate, but like...
To make friends.
Yeah, really, I did it to make friends. But just to create a world in which people feel like they're a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that, but it is also very confusing. And, you know, it's interesting. It's been a thing to navigate that, of like all of a sudden people know my name and feel like they really know me, but I'm like... Wait, that is a character. It's like a lot to process.
Mm-hmm.
In therapy. And and so in hindsight, when I read back the book, you know, I just read it back a week before it came out. I hadn't read it in like a month.
Mm-hmm.
And with new fresh month gone by eyes, I was realizing, oh, this was really mean. I needed to distinguish myself for sure.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think I am different. I've also been doing Broad City for 10 years now.
Yeah.
So I've grown up next to the character, and we are growing. We're not the same person.
No, I really connected with a lot of the stories in the book, which I read last night.
Yay.
Wow,
you binged it.
I did. I binged it. It's the Netflix of books. I was really into two particular stories.
Okay.
The one when you talked about falling in love with this woman,
mm-hmm.
And also the letter, which the I did letter. Not know about. Somehow
yeah,
I had missed that viral
Isn't that
story.
A crazy thing that happened. Yeah. So the first chapter in the or the second chapter in the book, there's kind of an introduction. It's kind of the first one, is about this thing that happened to me right when we were starting to write Broad City. And it's not connected to the trip, but when I was writing the book, it felt so connected because it was about this love letter.
Mm-hmm.
So basically in 2013, I was in LA for a month, sublet my apartment in New York, and we had been like staffing season one Broad City. I came back, there was all this mail, and I love mail, but like it's never good now. It's always like junk and bullshit, whatever. But there was this one letter that was in this like envelope, this transparent postal service envelope, and within it, because there was a transparent window, I could see this really old letter, like a
1944.
Fucking old ass letter, 1944, addressed to a woman in my apartment, in the same address as me. It was from Lieutenant Joseph O. Matthews to his wife. He had been shipped out to, he was in a training camp,
mm-hmm.
getting ready. He was being shipped off to Okinawa like the next day, and sending a love letter to his wife who was living. I lived on McDougal Street in Manhattan.
So I had two
and
thoughts
I was like,
from
what
that.
The fuck?
I lived on McDougal Street.
You did?
Once. Yeah.
Which is literally like the I lived for a year and a half only, and mm-hmm. this happened. And it was like you're living in the bowels of NYU, like pizza.
I went there when I went to NYU for grad school for yeah. like just a semester.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I can't live here anymore. And
oh, I couldn't. I moved to Brooklyn. Same. I was like, I had lived in Astoria, Queens for 5.5 years. And I was like finding a little bit, like I could afford a little bit of a nicer apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in a studio, but was a like studio with French doors. So it's like they said it was like a half bedroom or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck you guys.
Those New York scammers.
You can put French doors in the middle of a room and create two rooms, but it's not.
I love those apartments where they're technically two bedrooms, but you have to walk through one
the railroad.
Person's bedroom. Yeah, the railroad.
It's worse than not having it's like, yeah. Yeah, and so I lived like right across from the Comedy Cellar.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, those two really intrigued me because you talk so much about like being like this hopeless romantic and into love and stuff like that. And I don't actually think that I have been in love before in retrospect. You know, I've had moments where I've been obsessed with someone.
Yeah.
And then I moved on because of the restraining order. But, you know, there's the idea of, you know, I feel like I would have gotten so into that letter too. I would have
and
tried to hunt
yeah.
them down.
And I did hunt the family down and delivered
yeah.
it. And I think it was in retrospect in writing and feeling so heartbroken and sort mm-hmm. of that first essay came after where I sort of hadn't I forgot about that story. Mm-hmm. But what a special thing to have happen where I got this thing and it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I thought I was going to hand it to like this little old couple that had been in love for their whole lives, and it wasn't. It was kind of a sad story.
Well, in a way, you sort of then wrote your own letter.
I did.
When you wrote the book, and you wrote Heartbreak City.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that essay, too.
Thanks. And, you know, that was just, like, the hardest one, I think, for me to write.
Yeah. Writing about a relationship that's so fresh, too, and, you know, just fraught.
But it was, I mean, yeah, it is definitely about that, but it was also about this feeling of I had always felt like such like a secret outsider when it came to love in general. A lot of my friends, and I'm so happy for them, are so in love.
Yeah.
And so I always just felt like
I just have a bunch of single friends here in LA.
Oh, you do?
And we just got a brunch.
So that's great.
And we're just drunk all the time.
Literally hanging with like, I'm in like marriage counseling with all my friends. I'm like, it's me with
marriage
married
boot
couples.
Camp.
I am like, hey guys, where are we going for dinner? I'll sit at the end, you know, like. But I love them. They're like such good examples of what relationships can be. Mm-hmm. But I really always felt very alone in that aspect. And I think that's the stuff I like writing about, the stuff that I don't say out loud. You get to write about it. And then I guess I have to say it out loud right here.
Well, I mean, you called the book, I Might Regret This.
I mean, I still might. Who knows?
Do you regret anything at this point yet?
No.
Okay.
I feel really, it's terrifying, one, to do a new format, too, like essays. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that it's very terrifying that people will be like, well, she really can't write, you know? Here, we have the proof here. She can't write, and she should stick to the dialogue, you know, or whatever. That was a fear. And then, obviously, I'm writing about such personal things that I don't say to a lot of people. But it ultimately was so, I learned so much about myself writing it. So,
I'd watch this road trip movie.
Yeah? Yeah, you should write the movie.
Yeah, it's very Joan Didion.
Thank you.
In the book, like things you were
reading,
podcasts you listened to. I love how you put finally next to Joan Didion's The White Album, because a friend got me that for, the friend whose wedding I went to got me that for my birthday as a gift in like 2011. I've not read it yet.
She's an incredible writer. And she writes so much about California. I mean, as someone who, if you're living in California, it's like a great time
to read
it.
That's what I love. Like, Slouching Toward Bethlehem is great.
Yeah, she's just beautiful and has such a specific style. And I was like, how have I not read this?
Yeah.
And so I felt like that was the,
I gotta read
this road
it.
Trip was the place.
And you're listening to podcasts,
yeah,
rival podcasts, like
Sorry,
The Daily.
I know, sorry.
Next road trip, keep it in there.
I will, sorry. Yeah. I did listen to, I know, I'm an asshole. I'll walk away in shame.
It's fine. I will take down The Daily if it is the last thing I do.
I love that you're like, fuck The Daily. It's like, it's good.
Yeah,
it's like different.
It's good.
Right?
I could be Daily too.
You could, but it's like,
I would
they
never.
Can both exist.
Yeah, that's
right?
true.
Yeah.
I guess.
Okay.
But I just want a rivalry.
Okay, I mean, it's so funny for you to be in like direct competition with them.
They don't even know who I am.
Yes, they do.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank
Abby.
You so much for having me. What a pleasure. What a great way to start off a really terrifying day.
Yes.
Right?
We've told everyone that this episode was recorded on voting day.
Yeah,
so
I am.
Either you're going to have a lot of fun listening to this because you're in a good mood, or you really need this episode.
You really need this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So either way, you know, choose your own adventure here.
When we're back, we're going to play a game. And we're back with a game I like to call Please Don't Play My Music. Because we're recording this on Election Day, and no matter how it unfolds, we want to end the show on a fun note. Donald Trump has a history of playing songs at his rallies, of artists who would rather be excluded from his narrative. This week, after Trump played Please Don't Stop the Music at a rally for Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee, Rihanna tweeted, "Not for long. Me nor my people would ever be at or around one of those tragic rallies." She's not the first artist to condemn Trump's use of their music, however. In fact, some of our beloved artists have managed to drag Trump for playing their music as well. So I'm going to see if Ray and Lewis can match the quote to the artist when talking about Trump playing their music.
Oh, okay.
There are four questions, so, you know. We'll see.
There's room for error. Yeah. I can forgive myself and move on if I fuck up.
Yes,
okay.
We'll see who's better at figuring out celebrity quotes.
All right.
Probably Lewis.
Say, I think you've got some game here. We'll see how it goes.
From George Harrison's estate, the song Here Comes the Sun was used. Mm-hmm. Here are the quotes. "At least when Charles Manson used our music to incite a race war, he was honest about his intentions."
I love his straightforwardness, Charles Manson.
"If it had been Beware of Darkness, then we may have approved it."
Ooh.
"I defer to the alive one,"
oh,
Paul
God.
McCartney.
First of all, there's two alive ones, guys.
That's hilarious.
It better be B.
It is B.
That's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it has to be B, because he's British and dead. They'd be way more polite than the other two. A race war?
Yeah.
British people don't say race war.
That was the tell. Yes.
All right. Ray, this question's for you.
Sure.
Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine.
Mm-hmm.
Did Axl Rose say, "Now and then when I see her face, she takes me away to that special place. I wish I could have written those lyrics in 2016 because that's how I feel when I think of Hillary Clinton. Hashtag still with her."
Okay.
Two, can you say shit bags? Poop emoji. Three, as a band who VH1 once called the greatest rock band of all time, I can see Trump's natural inclination to use our music. We respectfully ask him to fuck off. Respectfully, fuck off.
It's Axl. So I'm inclined to go poop emoji, but I'm going to go C.
You were right. The first time is poop
really?
Emoji.
Yeah.
He had a whole rant, didn't he? He went on and on about how.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, but Axl is a terrorist.
I
no,
know.
No, the just, idea
I'm
that
still, he, still with her.
I shouldn't say terrorist. That's not. But he was not kind back in his day.
No.
You don't want people to attack you like they did Don Lemon for saying white men are terrorists.
Look, I'm not out here trying to have the president call me low IQ because I'm a Negress.
I would love it if Trump called someone on this podcast low IQ. We could use the rating.
For sure, I'm only guesting on me.
We'll we'll bring you back. Fourth co-host if Trump calls you low IQ.
That Axl Rose is something of a moral authority in 2018.
Hello?
This is a man whose name is an anagram of oral sex.
Wasn't there a thing? I could be wrong, but there are internet rumors of him using N-words.
Oh, no,
yeah.
He did. And he at the time actually said about that. He was like, "I didn't mean it as a racial slur. I meant it as the problems we face." Just that nonsense.
Yeah.
And he used to, horribly homophobic. So that he is on our side.
Yeah.
And I'm mumbling before I go to bed on election day. Thank you, Axl Rose. Speaking in a tragic.
So we've got 1-0. Going into our third question.
Okay.
REM's It's the End of the World.
As we know it, yes.
A, go fuck yourselves, the lot of you. You sad, attention-grabbing, power-hungry little man. Do not use our music or my voice for your moronic charade of a campaign. Fuck that orange-faced bastard. You get America's Got Talent contestant Jackie Ivanko, and that's it.
She's like 6 years old.
See, all press is good press. Thanks for introducing our music to a new group of people.
Ooh, it better not be that one. I like Michael Stipe too much. I'm feeling A.
A, you were correct.
Oh my God, I kind of wish REM had more legs as like a band nowadays. I wish people talked about them more. The lyrics are so strange, but like personal. It's like a brand of lyrics we don't have anymore.
So like being black, I wasn't really rocking to R.E.M. and Smashing Pumpkins in my youth.
I was trying to politely assert that, right? But I didn't know where to come in.
I have no idea.
R.E.M. for me is a karaoke song.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, you know, I feel like a dickhead saying
but a few years ago, I tried to get into both. I got into Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, sure.
Very well.
Oh, too bad that's like not a great
because,
person.
Well, I know, right? But I got into that because I mostly like the rock music that I was listening to was like Hall, Garbage.
Harder
like, I was
stuff.
Listening
yeah,
to
yeah.
women.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, it was easy to transition into Smashing Pumpkins. But R.E.M., I was just sort of like, is that it?
Oh, you got to get Automatic for the People.
There was some stuff there, but it wasn't compelling me to keep listening.
Oh, yeah.
R.E.M. for me is like when black people do karaoke and they pick an R.E.M. song, it's like, wow, you have esoteric interest.
Yeah.
It's like, it's always that person. It's like, you're weirdly cool. That's how you know that R.E.M.
Yes. They pick those songs for a reason, yeah. That black person.
But that was a really popular moody gay guy for a while, which we like lost. Now we have Troye Sivan, who's like kind of moody, but mostly cute. This was serious moody.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're already losing, but
this one's worth three points.
Here's the last question. This one's for three.
Oh, okay. Well, so you're going to handicap Lewis? Yeah. Thank you. Break his knees.
We're taking away his white privilege.
We're trying to stop your bag.
Ray, stop your bag.
I have no identity without that privilege. Give it back.
I'm about to make merch.
The song,
Ray, stop Lewis's bag.
The song is Rocket Man by Elton John. A, why not ask Ted fucking Nugent or one of those fucking country stars? They'll do it for you. B, I don't know what's worse, using the title of my song to instigate nuclear war with Kim Jong-un or playing my song at a rally for the people who wouldn't know good style if it bit them in their crusty arse. C, he knows I'm gay, right?
I'm going to go with C.
It was A.
All three of them seem really possible to me.
Yes. He dragged Ted Nugent.
I was surprised. Do you know why I didn't go A? Because I didn't think that Elton would drag country.
Oh, yeah. One of those fucking country stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a country album. The one with My Father's Gun on it. Tumbleweed Connection.
Yeah.
So that was surprising. I would have gone A otherwise. But yeah, okay, fine. Even with the advantage, I lost to Lewis. You are a god.
Oh, well, thank you.
Apologies.
I will say he has historically dragged other people, though, like his Madonna nonsense all the time.
Yeah.
When they fight, it's like homosexuality's parents are getting divorced.
Yeah. Well, thank you for not being twice as good, Ray.
You know, the black mediocrity means equality.
When we're back, keep it. And we're back with everyone's favorite segment. It's Keep It.
Keep It.
I looked very excited there.
As if I have never played this game before. Yeah, Keep It. Yes.
Lewis. I'm going to let Ray go first.
Please do. We've had such a good time with Ray.
This is your last Keep It, Ray.
This is the first time I've been picked first.
Yeah.
Ever?
Yeah, my parents don't even pick me first. I'm a middle child, that's why. Keep It. My Keep It is for all the big media conglomerates who suddenly realized too late that an ad was racist. Wow! A day late when it doesn't count! So recently there was an ad that was released by the Trump campaign that basically...
The campaign for 2020, by the way.
Why are we counting that money?
Calm down.
Let's talk about that money. Later, with people who know how to count money. I don't. I'm really bad at math. Never made it past algebra. Trig, maybe. Cosine. I don't know. But my frustration is that, like, we keep talking about racism in America and its role in politics as if Trump is new. And we need to talk about Trump's relationship to, or the present version of the Republican Party being the descendant of the Republican Party that we knew before. And one of those traditions that is carried on is apparently the racist ad that is supposed to make people scared and run to the polls and vote against their economic interests.
This is
a
direct line from Willie Horton.
George W. Bush, Willie Horton, and you have caravan immigrant murderer on NBC Sunday Night Football in the best game that you could think of, like, watching. 21 million viewers. And after people complain about this really racist ad running in primetime in front of a lot of faces, the next day, when 21 million people had already seen it, now NBC reconsiders. CNN had already rejected the ad, but NBC reconsidered. And then NBC's reconsideration triggers Fox News's or Fox at All's reconsideration, and then Facebook takes down the ad. You didn't know that this ad was racist yesterday?
Facebook was like, this is racist. I can't wait.
Hello? And then we're like, oh, I guess this does violate our policies. My thing is, you can retract and apologize on Monday, but you wanted that Trump money. You wanted that good press for football with a Trump, and you don't get to undo it the next day. I can't unsee a thing. And it's so socially and morally and politically irresponsible to put this thing that you know is wrong and racist and think that the good thing that you'll get kudos for retracting it the next day. They didn't even put an ad on to apologize. It's not like on-air apologies happen. Release statements. You think 21 million people who saw that game on Sunday went and read your statement on Monday? No. So now we have a situation where the journalistic responsibility, or at least the reasonable places, the filters, the media that's supposed to be making good calls is making irresponsible calls 2 days before one of the most important elections in a generation. And it's really frustrating. And
you've got crazy white people taking up arms and militias trying to go down to the border. It's like, what is this going to turn into? Waco.
And we're sending troops down there. The caravan is a month away, and it's a fucking caravan, car and van. There is not.
It's the Scooby-Doo mystery machine.
What are we doing here?
Let Velma
speak.
Can you
imagine? I just want to understand how in the world, the greatest nation on the planet, we've got the best military in the world. You scared of a couple brown folk from down south?
In a caravan?
Yeah, it's really crazy.
The way they've talked about this, you know, you would, you'd think Voldemort was coming.
Exactly. You scared of 1,000 brown people, greatest nation in the world? Get out of here.
Voldemort approaching the border just on foot and seeing what he can get away with is pretty funny, though.
Are you saying, look, you can't do this. We are not going to give J.K. Rowling credit for making Voldemort brown, okay?
Actually, guys, if you would have looked closer in the text, you would see that Voldemort has always been
Latino.
A migrant.
He's escaping a war-torn country.
Lewis, what is your key fit?
I say this regretfully. I obviously love Carly Rae Jepsen, especially at a point when it feels like only gay men can hear the words Carly Rae Jepsen. I feel like I say the words and then just it goes blank on the radio for our straight listeners. I apologize. But she has a new song called Party for One, which before I heard it, I was told by reputable gay people it was a bop. Guys, it sounds like it's going to be a bop at the beginning, and then it shrinks away from being a bop and becomes too docile a song about self-love. Love. We have already too many great songs about self-love. It's kind of a boring topic to me. I'm just going to say it. And anyway, it's not nearly the level of Cut to the Feeling, her last big old hit, or last big gay beloved hit. Sorry, she doesn't have big hits anymore, and I say that affectionately. Or her entire Emotion album, which is a modern classic. Her entire album, Kiss, which I think is also an under-heralded classic.
It is. And also, the gays don't appreciate that album as much as they do Emotion.
Right, and do you know why? It's because they're afraid to defend it because it's more bubblegum and it's not as cool to like bubblegum.
Yeah.
How about that?
This Kiss is so much
banger
better than
yes.
most of the songs that they rant about.
Yeah. Hurt So Good, Turn Me Up. Those are all like deep. Also, I just want to say, Carly Rae Jepsen now in this new video, though, looks great. She's doing a blonde thing. And when she's blonde, her face really goes to a Baranski place. What a big move.
I like a Baranski.
Yeah, right. Oh, also one of Kara's 10 white women, now that I think about it. But anyway, Carly, rooting for you. Hope the next album is great. The song's a little docile for me.
Remember when she was supposed to be recording like an ABBA-esque album?
Yeah, I think she has no choice but to record ABBA-esque albums, so hopefully we'll get one of those soon.
All right.
I call her Smiley Minogue.
I'm sorry that blonde Diane Lockhart doesn't do it for you.
No, I'm excited for it. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, good. We're excited for blonde Diane.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, you're right. I see what you're saying. Yes.
Well, my keep it for the week goes to People Magazine, who finally in 2018 discovered Idris Elba is sexy.
Oh,
like,
yes.
He's the sexiest man alive. And it's also the cover says the amazing rise of the sweet smoldering superstar.
Rise?
What? All he's done is be.
Idris Ben Elba. He had already risen last year when you put Blake Shelton on the fucking cover.
I have to say, after Blake Shelton last year, I thought like the winner this year would be what, like the cast of Shark Tank? Pat Sajak gonna be the sexiest man alive?
It's just like the tomfoolery.
Yeah.
Can you imagine figuring out that Idris Elba is fine after K. Michelle? That's crazy. You're so late. Love and Hip Hop got there first.
He was hot in that movie that was not about being hot at all. Beast of No Nation.
He's so hot, he was hot as Mandela. And he didn't even do a good job.
I love a Mandela who can fuck.
He was hot trying to murder Taraji P. Henson.
He was hot as Stringer Bell. Okay? Yes. That's where I got.
Which is wild to me. Because the only people I ever hear talking about The Wire still are white people. So how did they not know that he been hot?
He been hot. Okay? Look, here is... if you're a drug dealer trying to apply rules of debate to conversations about how to split up crack, like how to cook crack or whatever, like, you're amazing. You've been hot. He's been amazing for 10 years at least, you know? And you would think that, like, being black and having a British accent would give him a leg up with these kind of folks, but even that, you have to be twice as good as Blake Shelton and have a British accent.
Do you know there have only been three
African-Americans on the cover?
Yeah. Can we guess?
It's got to be Denzel.
Poitier.
I think this started way too late.
It started in 95.
So I feel like they would give him an old school one, right? No?
No.
No. All right.
It's definitely Denzel, right?
Yes.
Okay. Wait.
Are there women in this world at all? Oh, Will Smith has got to be it.
No.
Will Smith hasn't won one.
No.
I remember Lupita. Mm-hmm. Lupita got one mm-hmm. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I think.
No, they've only had one sexiest woman alive. I think Esquire does it. Esquire does the sexiest woman alive, but
People only did one
sexiest woman alive in 2014.
Berry?
No, it was Kate Upton.
Moving right
along. It's not a black woman.
No, I was just saying Kate Upton was the sexiest woman alive.
Oh, okay.
The other black person is The Rock.
Whoa, I was never going to get that.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Which also, they went from, okay, like, this is so questionable. So, like, Johnny Depp, weirdly, was sexiest man alive in 2009.
They're really into eyeliner?
Before we knew he was a real monster.
But you knew that he drew bad makeup on his face?
Yes.
Nothing gets me hotter than a quizzical shop owner or whatever he's dressed as.
The predecessor,
a mood pirate?
The predecessor to Jeffree Star. after that was Ryan Reynolds. Mm-hmm. Hot. Bradley Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hot. Channing Tatum.
Meaty.
And then Adam Levine, who I find hot.
I'm very attracted to
Adam. I do think so. I mean, facial symmetry. Let's just talk about
Chris
that.
Chris Hemsworth. David Beckham.
That one.
The Rock. And then Blake Shelton.
That's some good PR.
You've got that right.
Yeah, that is great PR.
They really, and you know what? Because it was 2017 too. It was post-Trump.
Yeah.
They were like, let's just like
lean
these,
in.
Yes, these MAGAs.
They didn't realize that Blake Shelton's appeal is Adam Levine on that show.
Yeah, yes. Right. Also, maybe Adam some Levine. Like Queen working at People was like, maybe I'll get to hang out with Gwen if we invite you know. I feel like gay men scheme to hang out with Gwen.
I'm scheming to hang out with Gwen.
I created a whole podcast so Gwen would come on it eventually. Come on it, Gwen Stefani.
I just need another Gwen and Pharrell collab, please.
Yes.
Leave Blake alone.
Come here, wear your houndstooth jumpsuit.
We'll have these rolls in our hair. Our hairline will be too white and it'll be painfully pulled up, but we will love you.
Yeah.
Ray.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show again.
Thank you for having me.
This
it's
is your
really
swan
fun.
Song.
It's my get rid the fuck of me.
We're about to they shoot horses, don't they? You
you gonna make me glue?
We're gonna murk you right now.
I do have horse teeth. So.
Ray,
what?
You're gorgeous.
No, I wasn't compliment fishing. Now your audience is going to think that I'm one of those. I just posted because I thought it was cute. I'm going to delete it.
Well, Ray is gone after this week. But you know what? Lewis is gone too.
Oh, that's right. I am.
Yes, we're doing another episode in New York. But also, if you want to get your fix of me and Lewis and Kara and you were in Los Angeles, we have a live show December 6th at the Peppermint Club.
Which is not a speakeasy in Candyland. It's a real place. Lord Licorice lifts up a curtain. Come in here.
You can go to peppermintclub.com to get your tickets. We are almost sold out. So,
eek!
Come and see us.
I'll do a little dance.
I want to thank Abby Jacobson again for coming on the podcast. Go and get I Might Regret This. It's out now. That's it for Keep It. I'll see you next week.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothes.
Dan is very busy, clothes only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.